ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 हरे कृष्ण। श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर नंबर 2 टेक्स्ट नंबर 4 5.2.4। इट्स अ वेरी वेरी लॉन्ग वर्स कंसिडर्ड इन डिफरेंट मीटर, सो आई ट्राइड टू ब्रेक इट डाउन सो आई कैन सिंग इट इन द ब्रह्मास मीटर ट्यून दैट्स इन द लिरिक। सचतत आश्रमो भवनम अतिरमणीयम्।
सतत आश्रम भवनम अतिरमणीयम्।
विविध निविध विताप विताप निकर संश्रेष्ठा।
विधि निविध विताप विताप निकर संश्रेष्ठा।
पुरत लता रुध स्थला विहंगम मिथुनैः।
जलसाय कमलाकरं उपवारमा।
सा
शी
पूर्वचिति
च।
नो सॉरी, यस इज सा शी विच इज पूर्वचिति च
च
आल्सो
आल्सो
तत्
तत्
ऑफ महाराज अग्निधरा
Ashrama, ashrama
of the place of meditation.
Of the place of meditation.
Upavanam,
upavanam
the park.
The park.
Ati,
ati
very,
very.
Ramaniyam,
ramaniyam
beautiful,
beautiful.
Vivida,
vivida
varieties of,
varieties of.
Nivida,
nivida
dense,
dense.
Vitapi,
vitapi
trees,
trees.
Vitapa,
vitapa
of branches and twigs.
Of branches and twigs.
Nikara,
nikara
messes.
Masses,
samlista,
samlista,
attached,
attached,
purata,
purata,
golden,
golden,
lata,
lata,
with creepers,
with creepers,
arudha,
arudha,
going high,
going high,
istava vihangama,
tada viladangama,
of land birds,
of land of hobland birds,
mithuni,
mithuni,
with pairs,
with pairs,
prochamana,
prochamana,
vibrating,
vibrating,
sutvir,
sutvir,
pleasing sound,
pleasing sound,
pratibodhyamana,
pratibodhyamana,
responding,
responding,
salilakukkuta,
salilakukkuta,
waterfall,
waterfall,
karandava,
karandava,
ducks,
ducks,
kalahamsa,
kalahamsa,
with various kinds of swans,
with various kinds of swans,
adivi,
adivi,
and so on,
and so on,
vichitram,
vichitram,
variegated,
variegated,
upakujita,
upakujita,
resounding with the vibration,
resounding with the vibration,
amala,
amala,
clear,
clear,
jalasya,
jalasya,
in the lake,
in the lake,
kamalakaram,
kamalakaram,
the source of lotus flowers,
the source of lotus flowers,
upabrahma,
upabrahma,
begin to walk in,
begin to walk in.
Translation, translation, walking. The apsara sent by Lord Brahma began strolling in a beautiful park near the place where the king was meditating and worshipping. The park was beautiful because of its dense green foliage and golden creepers. There were pairs of varied birds such as peacocks, and in the lake there were ducks and swans, all vibrating with sweet sounds. Thus the park was magnificently beautiful because of the foliage. The the clear water, the lotus flower, and the sweet singing of various kinds of birds. There is no hope to believe the next one as well. Just leave that out. Tasya sulita gamana padavinyayasa gati vinayas chanupadam khanakhanayamana ruchira charana bharana swanam upakaranya naradeva kumara samadhi yogena militi nayana nandina mukulla yugalam ishara vikachaya vyachastha. Translation. As Purvachiti passed by on the road in a very beautiful style and moved of her own, the pleasing ornament of her ankles tinkled with her every step. Although Prince Abhinara was controlling his senses, practicing yoga with half opened eyes, he could see her with his lotus like eyes. And when he heard the sweet tinkling of her ankles, he opened his eyes slightly more and could see that she was just nearby. That's in the book of Kling. It is said that yogis always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with great hearts. Dhyana Ravasthita Targate Namanasa Pashyantiyam Yoginaha Bhagavatam 12.13.1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always observed by yogis who practice controlling the venomous senses. As recommended in Bhagavad Gita, yogis should practice Sapraksya Nashikram, keeping half eyes half, keeping their eyes half open. If the eyes are closed completely, there will be tendency to sleep. So-called yogis sometimes practice a fashionable form of yoga by closing their eyes and meditating. But we have actually seen such so-called yogis sleeping and snoring while meditating. This is not the practice of yoga. To actually practice yoga, one should keep his eyes half open and gaze at the tip of his nose. It's a long book, so I'm just break it there. Just the synopsis of that is Prabhupada is saying that yogis try to control their senses, and for this is the standard yogis, and the best way, the right way to do it is by having your eyes half closed, half open. Other than that, if it's fully closed, they will doze off to sleep. And this is just a standard yogis, yeah? Next, although Abhidhara, the son of Priyavrata, was practicing mystic yoga in trying to control his senses, the tinkle sound of Purushiti's ankle birds disturbed his practice. Yoga Indriya Sayamya. Actual yoga practice means controlling the senses. One must practice mystic yoga to control the senses. But the sense control of a devotee who fully engages in the service of the Lord with his purified senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, can never be disturbed. Prabodhananda Saraswati therefore stated, Dulayandindriya Kala Sarpa Padali Prokahata Damstra Yate Chaitanya Chaitanya Fara. The practice of yoga is undoubtedly good, because it controls the senses, which are like venomous serpents. So Prabhupada so far has explained that for Ashtanga Yogi, he tries to control his senses, whereas for the devotee, controlling the senses becomes very easy because he is engaging his senses in the service of the Lord. The practice of yoga is undoubtedly good because it controls the senses, which are like venomous serpents. When one engages in devotional service, however, completely employing all the activities of the senses in the service of the Lord, the venomous quality of the senses is completely nullified. It is explained that the serpent is to be feared because of its poisonous fangs. But if those fangs are broken, the serpent, although it seems fearsome, is not at all dangerous. So Prabhupada now says that after explaining that devotees controlling their senses is easy for them, and he gives the energy of the serpent. That if the serpent's fangs are chopped off, then it will not have poisonous effect on us. Prabhupada continues. Devotees therefore may see hundreds and thousands of beautiful women with fascinating bodily movements and gestures, but not be allured, whereas such women would make ordinary yogis fall. Even the advanced yogi Vishwamitra broke his mystic practice to unite with Menaka, and he became a child known as Kuntala, the practice of mystic yoga, therefore, is not sufficiently strong to control the senses. Prabhupada says that the practice of Ashtanga yoga is nice, but it is not strong enough medicine for us to control our senses. Another example is Prince Agnidhara, whose attention, and then Prabhupada gives the example of this particular verse, which we are looking for Agnidhara, Prabhupada writes. Another example is Prince Agnidhara, whose attention was drawn to the movements of Purvachiti, the Apsara, simply because he heard the tinkling of her inner bells. In the same way that Vishwamitramuni was affected by the tinkling bangles of Menaka, Prince Agnidhara, upon hearing the tinkling bangles of Purvachiti, immediately opened his eyes to see her beautiful movements as she walked. The prince was also very handsome. As described here, his eyes were just like the buds of lotus flowers. As he opened his lotus-like eyes, he could immediately see that the Apsara was present by his side. Om Gyanati Vyanadhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurudhiritam Yena Tasmaya Shri Yirvena Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vesthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Swamiti Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavani Paschatya Vesvahane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Nandada Shri Vashari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama
Rama Rama
Hare. So, in this section what we are seeing is that generally in English, you know, they are this technologist guy, you know, he's got a good sense of humor, or he's got a good sense of control. So the good, he or she has got a good sense of purpose. So sometimes, you know, this word sense gets put in front of another verb, you know, as an adjective, to explain, you know, to bring out some meaning, good sense. So here what we are seeing is that the prince of Agnidhara, you know, is attracted to the sense of beauty. The beauty of Purvachiti, you know, who is strolling in the park, beautiful park, explained here, when the prince is meditating, disturbs his meditation and is immediately attracted to the beauty. And then subsequently, you know, in the next few verses, you will see that he starts flexing around, you know, and then gets very, very attached to her. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us that Dhyaka Vishyam Tocha Sangat Yeshu Bajaya, that if we meditate on the sense object, which is the tan matras, if we meditate on the sense object, dhyato, then we get attached, sangas deshu bhajaya, then we get attached to the sense object. Now here actually, the situation is much more worse than that. Because there when Krishna is talking about the dhyato vishyantum, so if you meditate on a sense object, you will get attached to it. Here actually if you see what Prince Agnidhara is doing, he is not meditating on the sense object. Actually, he is meditating on something else. He is doing Ashtanga Yoga. So his meditation is something else completely. He is meditating on Lord Brahma, if I am not mistaken, you know, because that's what he is worshipping at the moment, doing Ashtanga Yoga. So when he is even not meditating on the sense object, but meditating on somebody else, still, just by hearing the tingle of the inner bells of this beautiful girl, his sadhana breaks, his meditation breaks, and he gets attached. And the rest is pretty much in his own workings. So we can see, you know, how much when somebody who is meditating, not meditating on the sense object, but something higher, can get so easily distracted, no? And let's say fall down, then what are the consequences of those and us who actually do go ahead and meditate on the sense object? No? Then the detachment is just too far up, you know, it just becomes way too difficult. So yes, no? Maharaj Parikshit, no? Allowed Kali Yuga to walk in his kingdom because being a devotee, he saw the good in Kali Yuga. What was the good in Kali Yuga Devi? So, that just by thinking of something good, the Kali Yugaites will get benefit. But if they think of something bad, they will not get the reaction. So just by thinking, we can accumulate so much of, you know, pious credits. Just by thinking, that's the beauty of Kali Yuga. So Maharaj Parikshit allowed him in his kingdom, otherwise there was no chance. So, here, you know, because Kali Yuga has got that, no? But so if we meditate in the sense objects, then although we don't get, you know, let's say the reactions of it, but it can attach us. When Sangha happens, then we are gone. No? So we have to be very, very careful, is the point that Prabhupada was emphasizing in his purpose. No? To be very, very careful. So before we discuss a little bit more about, you know, Agnidhara and Purvachiti, I just wanted, because this is chapter 2 of Canto 5, we have just begun chapter Canto 5. And certainly this is my first lecture on Canto 5, you know, in the temple now. So I just wanted to quickly, because who is this Agnidhara that we are talking about? And who is this Purvachiti? Where did Agnidhara come from? What is the context? What is the flow of the Bhagavatam to bring us to this point in time? And generally, you know, when we are starting this encounter, this was a good time to recap what is happening. And then I wanted to go back to Canto 4, because that's of course where the storyline will build up. And then I went back to Canto 3 in my mind. And then I went back to Canto 2 and then Canto 1. So you know, we will start from Canto 1 only. And today's majority of the time, I'll be speaking about, you know, the four cantos of Bhagavatam, building up to Canto 5, and then a little bit about Agnidhara and Purvachiti and the back end, you know, for the next few minutes at the end. So, if we start Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, from Canto 1, what happens in Bhagavatam? That Bhagavatam is, you know, compared to the beautiful, you know, form of the Lord Himself. Just as we take darshan of the Lord from His lotus feet, you know, up to His sandy face. Similarly, you know, we read Bhagavatam Prabhupada said also in that particular order, from Canto 1, Canto 2, 1, 1. Straight we are taking the Prabhupada darshan of the Bhagavatam, which is called darshan padidhi. So Canto 1 and Canto 2 talks mainly about introduction to Bhagavatam. There are 10 subject matters in Bhagavatam, which we will discuss shortly. But Canto 1 and Canto 2 mainly talk about introduction to Bhagavatam, with a little bit brief description about Sarada and Visarga, generally, you know, towards the back end of Canto 2. But mainly about the introduction to many, many things. What does it introduce in Canto 1? Who are the main characters? Who are the main speakers in the Bhagavatam? Who are the main characters? Main personalities. So who are the main speakers? As we know, Bhagavatam is very nested conversation. So it starts with Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. Then we also know that that is a subset of a bigger discussion that was happening between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. Then we know that is a bigger discussion. That Sukadeva Goswami wrote the transcendental knowledge from Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva got it from Narada Muni. Narada Muni got it from Lord Brahma. Brahma got it from Lord Vishnu, Krishna himself. You know? So that's the parampara. We get introduced to all these different speakers. Different characters, different personalities, exalted personalities, such as Kunti Maharani. And what does she want in the Bhagavatam? She wants, you know, that vipada, you know, that tribulation should keep coming in her mind, in her life, so that she can think of Krishna more and more. Dhyana, again, you know, meditating on Krishna. Here, we can see how meditation is broken so easily by the attraction of the opposite sex. So devotees want to meditate on the Lord, so that we are not mesmerized, you know, by the material dilemma. So she wants to meditate on the Lord, and therefore she asks for more vipada, more tribulation, so she can think of the Lord. We get introduced to Bhishma Dev, when he is about to leave his body. What does Bhishma Dev say? Oh my Lord, let me now meditate on your beautiful form so that I can leave my body. Now that you are present before me, let me meditate. Close my eyes and meditate on your pastimes and your form, and I will leave my body. So that's Bhishma Dev gets introduced. Then we get introduced to Sukadeva Goswami. So Kunti Maharani offers a beautiful prayers in Canto 1. Bhishma Dev offers his beautiful prayers in Canto 1. Then we get introduced to Sukadeva Goswami in Canto 2. He starts answering Maharaj Parikshit's question. And Sukadeva Goswami offers his beautiful prayers in Canto 2 of Bhagavatam. No? Amazing prayers about paying obeisances to the Lord and asking the Lord for his mercy. So he does that so that he can answer Maharaj takes his position, you know, authoritatively in the Prabhupada. So he offers his prayers to Krishna. So like that. But amongst all these personalities and all these characters introduced in the festival characters of Bhagavatam, one thing is categorically clear right from the beginning. And what is that? Ete cha amsa kala umsa. Krishna to Bhagavan Swayam. Ete cha amsa kala umsa. So Krishna has got amsa and has got kala. So the amsa is his plenary extensions, and kala are his extensions of the extensions. So Krishna is the, and Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam, that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you are the avatari, and all your other extensions and extensions of the extensions are your kala, and are your amsa and are your kalas. So Krishna gets categorically established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead amongst all these exalted personalities, like, you know, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and Vyasadeva Narayana, all are introduced, but Krishna is right from the center, you know, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then what also gets very, you know, quickly established, apart from establishment of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what also gets very quickly established is that amongst all the processes and the various paths of transcendence, Bhakti Yoga is the Supreme. The supremacy of Bhakti is very quickly articulated by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, no? At the beginning of Canto 2. Because Maharaj Parikshit's question, fundamental question was what is the beauty of somebody who is at any point in time, especially of a person who is about to die? So Sukadeva, and knowing that there was an urgency in Maharaj Parikshit's question, because he's going to leave his body in 7 days' time, then Sukadeva Goswami immediately tells him the answer, that it is Hare Nama no Kirtana. But there he also says that what are the other processes? Certainly he says that Grihavati life is a waste of time. Don't do Grihavati life. Reject immediately. Then he says that demigod worships, why do people do demigod worships? It's because they want some material opulence, such as a nice house, nice car, nice son, nice wife, you know, nice job, nice education. These are what people want from demigods. Reject that. Now, why do you have to do all that? When one can just live a very simple life, you can use your hands as your pillows, you can sleep on the floor, you know, you can eat just fruits and nuts. Why do you need all these complications and worshipping demigods? So, no, dismantle. Then he says, of the other yoga processes, no, if somebody is doing Ashtanga yoga, then he says, well, okay, there is a bona fide process. Only it's very slow. It will take you, you know, longer time to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there could be fold downs, just like you can see here in case of Abhinara, there can be fold downs. And plus, you are endeavoring on your own without the mercy of the Lord. It's your own personal solo endeavor, because it's a Sthana Yoga. The supremacy of Bhakti gets established to say, if you do Bhakti Yoga, your endeavor is only your sincerity. And the mercy of the Lord will do the rest of the magic. So do Bhakti, that's how it gets established. Then Maharaj Parikshit asks about the process of creation of the material universe. How does it get created? Then Sukadeva Goswami tells him actually how it creates. Lord Vishnu explains as Karmadaksha Vishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Kshiradaksha Vishnu to the Virat Rupa, and then how the different elements are contributed. You know? Right from Lord Vishnu glancing at Pradhan, which gets activated and becomes Mahatattva. Then the Bhumi Rakamalavaya Kamuni. All these elements are introduced and then the creation starts. So, right towards the end then of Canto 2, we hear the Chatushroti Bhagavatam from Lord Vishnu, who is giving the very wisdom to Lord Brahma, because Narada Muni has asked Parikshit Maharaj has asked some questions of Sukadeva Goswami, which are similar in nature to the questions that Narada Muni is asking Lord Brahma, which are similar in nature to what Lord Brahma had asked Lord Vishnu at the beginning of creation. So when these questions are asked, and Maharaj Parikshit is asking this question, you can see how Sukadeva Goswami answers this question by reference to the discussion between Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma. Why? Because that is the parampara. Parampara means to quote authorities to answer the question, not according to our own wings. So immediately, and especially if the question is about how this material world was created, then well, it is best to hear from the second living creator himself, which is Lord Brahma, rather than we trying to articulate. So he refers to that discussion. So there, Lord Brahma also asks Lord Vishnu four fundamental questions, you know, about, you know, what are the forms of you, my Lord, what are your different forms, what are your different energies, what are your different activities, and how can I save you without becoming proud. So in response to these four questions, Lord Vishnu gives Lord Brahma the Chatushloki Bhagavatam in chapter 9 of Canto 2. Then Canto 10 ends with, you know, the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra sarga visharvascha sthanam phoshanam utaya manmantre shanu katha nirodha muktir ashraya. So 10 subject matters of Bhagavatam are introduced, which are elaborated from the four bases that Lord Vishnu gave to Lord Brahma. From the Chatushloki, we extend into the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And these 10 subject matters are given, the 9 are given only for the purpose to reach the 10th one, which is ashraya, which is taking shelter. Ashraya means shelter. Taking shelter of Krishna, the 9 other subjects are given. So where are these 10 subject matters found in Srimad Bhagavatam? They are found throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. All 10 subject matters are found throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. Having said that, some subject matters are primarily discussed more in some cantos compared to the other. So that is why Acharyas have told us that they have dissected the cantos into different subject matters. For example, Canto 1 and 2 introduces its introduction to Bhagavatam with a brief description about Sarga and Visarga. Canto 3 and 4 are primarily about Sarga and Visarga. And then what we are reading now, Canto 5, is about Sthana, or about the geographical locations and placements of the material universe. That's where we are. Canto 10 talks about Ashraya, which is the smiling face of the Lord. 11 talks about Mukti, which is liberation. And 12 talks about Nirvana, which is annihilation of this material world. So like that. So in 10 Canto, we see primarily the discussions is Maitreya Muni telling Uddhava about the Sarga and Visarga of the material world. Now Canto 4 is beautiful. Canto 4 is very, very beautiful because all the cantos are beautiful, but why I say it is almost like a repository for us in one sense, because we can learn from the amazing activities and the not so amazing activities of the others. So they are pastimes narrated of almost like the good cop and the bad cop, The good character and a bad character comes out in these discussions in Canto 4, from which we can learn the good virtues of those some personalities and the vices from the other. And they are full of it. It's like chapter after chapter, we go through these amazing pastimes, amazing narrations of this great, of these personalities. What are some of them? Just to bring it to light. In Canto 4, for example, we start with we see the event of Lord Dakshan and Lord Shiva. What do we learn from What do we learn from Daksha's characters? How not to be proud, because he was proud of his achievements, and because of that he demanded respect from everybody in the assembly. And Rupa told us that we don't demand respect, we command respect. If your characters are fine, people will respect us, but otherwise we don't go around demanding respect. So here Daksha was demanding respect from others, including Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva was meditating at that point in time, and he didn't stand up when Daksha entered the assembly. So Daksha took it as that Lord Shiva is very offensive to me, and then he started using foul language there, So, notwithstanding the provocation by Daksha, what was the reaction of Lord Shiva? We learn how to be tolerant when we are provoked. Lord Shiva didn't even speak a single word, just heard what Daksha said and stood up and left the assembly. Super tolerance. This shows that when we are agitated by somebody, if we can move away from the scene, it will be for our benefit. Sometimes corrections has to be made, that is true. Tolerance is not the only virtue. Tolerance has to be balanced with the virtue of justice that is there. But justice and correction are not the first reaction when we are provoked. We try to tolerate. So we tolerate as much as possible. So Lord Shiva tolerates the annoyance that he got from Daksha. So In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also tells us that mana apamana bhe. Whether we are, man means respect, you know, whether we are respected or we are disrespected, we should be equipoised in both situations. We are happy when we are respected and we are unhappy when we are disrespected. Because then what will happen? That our disposition is then dependent on somebody else's reaction to us. There is a problem in being happy or not happy depending on somebody else's reaction. We are pivoting our reaction, our happiness on somebody else, and that's a problem. Because then somebody else will someday respect us and someday not respect us. It's guaranteed. No? So if we live a life of dependence on any other living entity except for Krishna, then we are in trouble always. No? We are Shaiva. So he says, no, that mana apamana, be stable, be ex-siddhadhara, no? be firm, be stable. And Jayanti Mahaprabhu takes it to another level of Guru Veda. What does he say? Amanina manadeva. Amanina manadeva. Amani. For yourself, don't expect any respect. But manadeva. Give respect to others, regardless of who they are. So this is another high level, you know. Amanina manadeva. Kirtanya sadahari. So this is what we learn from Lord Shiva Daksha situation. Another thing that we learn, you know, by collaborating with another pastime is in Lord Ram's pastime. Just the night before coronation, when it was declared, you know, by Maharaj Dasarath that Lord Ram will be coronated as the king of Ayodhya the next morning, everybody was absolutely jubilant. The day before the coronation, you know, that all the arrangements for the yagya and everything else was being set up. Everybody was happy. But on the night before the coronation, when Mother Kekeyi asked for the two moons, and Lord Ram had to be exiled into the forest. So before the exilement, what are the reactions? Before the announcement that Lord Ram will be not the king and exiled, everybody, including Lakshman, is jubilant. Because my younger brother, who is my worshipable Lord, will be coronated as the king. So everybody is happy, including Lakshman. But when the news spreads, that due to some conspiracy, the Lord Ram is to leave Ayodhya and Bharat will be the king, Lakshman is furious, absolutely furious. And in his fury, he says that, no, I'm going to take revenge from my our father, Maharaj Dasarath, and punish Kekeyi, for this absolute horrendous demands. No, this is not all. No, if need be, we will do a mutiny, and we will do a coup on this government and take over, and I will install you as the rightful king. I'm not going to let this happen. No, so he's furious. And therein, Lord Ram teaches to us this very, very, very valuable lesson. Similar to what we have been talking so far. What does he say? Lakshman, till yesterday, you said that that our mother is the best father. Our mother is the best mother. Our father is the best mother because, at this stage when he would have continued to be the king, he's retiring as the king and bestowing and coronating you as the king, he is the best in the world. Today you are saying he is the worst in the world. What has happened? What has changed? Why are you furious now? What has changed? Old Pasar and Lakshman. This is what Lord Ram is asking Lakshman to teach us a lesson. What has changed, Old Pasar? And what has actually changed? Lakshman has changed and is furious just because somebody else has changed. And whereas Lord Ram, who is the Maryada Purushottam, who is the epitome of all fantastic, beautiful virtues and characters, Maryada, doesn't change at all. Because he is who he is. Not that he has also become furious because somebody else has been trying to take away his possessions. So he says, no, this is not how we react when tribulations come in life. We have to be stable. Be who you are. Don't be somebody that somebody else wants you to be. Then you will be in trouble. So beautiful, so beautiful. So tolerate and be firm and be stable. And what brings our stability among this is our devotion. Good qualities makes us stable. Let's continue. What are the other events in Canto 4? We see the pastime of Lord Dhruva with Sunichi, with Uttanapar, with Narad Muni. And Dhruva, that makes it five. Dhruva, Suniti, Suruchi, Uttanapar, and Narad Muni. What are the reactions? When Suruchi, she again disrespects or even chastises Dhruva with harsh words, saying that you are not eligible to sit on the lap of your father. This just, Dhruva being a Kshatriya by nature, burns him up. You say, oh my God, you can talk to me like this? Notwithstanding you as a small boy, he said, I'm going to take vengeance. I'm in a vengeance mode, I will take revenge. So he asks, etc. etc. So we see that we should not speak harshly like Suruchi. Suruchi, Ruchi means attachment, and Su means too much. So Suruchi is somebody who is too attached to her husband, Tanapad, and also to the kingdom, that she can't even see anybody else, you know, taking any share and pleasure in the kingdom. So we, you know, we should not be so attached to the material opponents, including the husband and the wife. No? So that's what we learn from Suruchi. From Suniti, who is the devotee mother of Dhruva, what do we learn? She teaches Dhruva to be patient. Be patient. Utsaha nishchay dhairya. Be patient. What is your rightful claim will come to you. But if you want to cool down, let's say, no? If you have to figure out why these things are happening to you, bad things happen to good people, then no, you go and meditate on Lord Vishnu. No? So how nicely, no, she is preaching to her own child. And generally, why this is so important and outstanding? Because when kids are spoken harshly, especially, you know, when children are spoken harshly, I'm just generalizing, but I could be wrong here. No, mother's reaction are different. We see in our, let's say, in our devotee congregation, when, you know, when somebody's children are, you know, let's say, ill-treated by another devotee, and the child goes and tells his mother, generally the mother's reaction will be, how dare they spoke to my son like this? How dare they did this to you? You know? Or even when children are playing, and one child pushes another child, you know, hates another child like that, and the child, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, you know, goes to the mother crying to say, by the way, you know, that boy pushed me, you know, and I go, we were playing. You know, I'm going to talk to his mother. They should fix him up. Because why do they do this to my child? My child is here. You know, so mothers are attached to the children, so they emotionally react like that. But at the same time, goes to the father and says, you know, that I got pushed by my friend and I'm hurt. What does the father say? Hey, toughen up, man. Be a man, you know. Be a boy. Toughen up. Be strong. That's what the father will say. He will not say, no, go and punch him and all that. It's like, just toughen up, right? You know, be a man, you know, like that. So the reactions are different. Mothers are generally more emotionally driven. Yeah? But Suniti, you know, is completely different. She doesn't say, let's just do something and accumulate some weapons or some astasiddhis and we'll take revenge on Suruchi. Not like that. Very, very patient. Very, very patient. And coolly telling Dhruva to accept that this is our reaction. It's the will of the Lord. Perform devotional service and everything will be alright. And then, you know, Dhruva goes and does this, you know, dhyan. Dhruva also does dhyan. You know? What's the difference between Dhruva's dhyan on the Supreme Personality of Godhead after being inspired by Narada Muni compared to the dhyan of Agnidhara here? You know? Agnidhara is also doing dhyan, you know, meditation, but just by the tinkle of the ankle bells of Purva Chitti, he goes. Bharu breaks his sadhana and goes away. And where does he go? He goes in Nerisa, you know, and then starts his own progeny. Whereas Dhruva, who is approaching the Lord with an inferior desire of wanting, you know, a palace that is not just better than the palace of Uttanapad, but actually a palace that is even better than the palace of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the secondary creator, he's got all the wealth in the world, you know, that's all project is his. So he wants a palace that is even better than him. Now, this is too much, no? Just to take that small revenge. But through the process of devotional service, his desires get purified by the Supreme Lord. Krishna says, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharvi. Whether you have any kama, you come to me and I'll fix you up. So here Dhruva's spiritual, material desires get transformed into a spiritual desire. And then when Lord Vishnu gives him the boon, you know, what do you want? He says, I was looking for a broken piece of glass. Now this is interesting. No? What does Dhruva teach us? He was looking for a palace that was higher than the palace of Lord Brahma. But he contrasts that thing that he was wanting, which is higher than the palace of Lord Brahma, as not glass. He doesn't compare it to glass. He compares it to broken pieces of glass.
That is almost like an extreme contrast now, from one to the other.
Because in Kali Yuga, when you see, you know, rich people, generally they have houses will be, you know, lot of glasses. You know? They will have, you know, penthouse, it is called, you know, the top layers of, you know, tall apartment, you know, the penthouse, they will have that as their house, as their palace, so that they can get the 360 view of the, you know, of sea one side, and the hill next side, and the city that side, everything. So, you know, glasses. So even glasses are useful. And that is what they desire. This is almost like groomer's mentality. You know, I want a palace that is surrounded by glass. Even, you know, when you walk on St. Kilda Beach on that Beacon's Hill Parade, you keep riding, you know, all the way to Brighton, you will see so many houses. And the front of the house is all glasses. You know, people want that view. This is what Dhruva wanted. Not so much for the view, but for the revenge. But Dhruva says this was nothing, not only glass, but this is, oh my god, broken piece of glass. Useless. Completely useless. I don't want this. He didn't get disturbed by any other material allurement. Whereas here, Vinidhara is completely gone. What do we learn from the pastimes of, from the teachings of Narada Muni? Narada Muni is not only in Dhruva pastime, but in so many pastimes, he comes and gives devotional service. And we know in Iskon, we are rich devotees, all of us rich, and some of us are frontline teachers, you know. So very, very important. You know? I had this, I'm going to repeat this, you know. The T's of a preacher, the letter T, the 5 or 6 T's of a preacher. What are they? A transparent transmission of transcendental topics. A transparent transmission of transcendental topics will bring about the transformation in the heart of the jiva, which will remove these vibrations. A transparent transmission of transcendental topics will bring out the transformations which will remove these vibrations. No? So very, very important to preach transparently about transcendental topics, not about coronavirus, not about, you know, footy or cricket or something, you know, mixed masala. No. Transcendental topics. Related to the Lord, and that will transform. So healing transforms the person. Krishna enters the heart through the ears, through the sound vibration, cleanses the heart, and then devotee never leaves the lotus feet of the Lord when he is purified. So many pastimes in temple form, yeah? There is more, but I'm going to park. Because I want to go to Kanto 5 now, where we are, yeah? Kanto 5 is the sthana, topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is compared to his neighbor, you know? In here, we talk about the sthana part of the Bhagavatam, as I said, you know? The Atrasarda, Vishardascha, sthanam portion, you know? So we are at that level. Here, we see that in Canto 4, Maitreya Muni was telling Uddhava, amongst other things, the descendants of Manu. And so Bhuva Manu in this particular episode, no? The descendants. And in that he said that one of the descendants, so Samyama Manu had five children. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, three daughters, and two sons, Uttanapad and Priyavata. So there, when he was talking about, when he spoke about the five children, when he spoke about Uttanapad, it was not so much about to glorify or narrate about Uttanapad, it was more so, after quickly describing who Uttanapad is, he can get to this beautiful episode of Dhruva. That's what he wants to narrate, no? So that's why we start. So after explaining all that, now Maitreya Muni continues with the pastimes of the other son of Swayam Bhuva Manu, who is Priyavrata. And in chapter 1 of Canto 5, which we have finished reading now, we have spoken about, we have seen the past, the episode of the narrations about Priyavrata, who he was, that he did a lot of sacrifice as well. Being subservient to the instructions of Lord Brahma, he gave us his own personal plans to retire. So now we are talking about the first son of King Priyavrata, who is Agnidhara. He had 13 sons from memory, you know. three of them took renunciation in three Vedokas, I think. And seven of them, he divided the world into seven islands and gave each of them to each of the seven sons. And one of the sons is Anidhara, who wrote the Bhumandala as his area of ruling. So that's why Canto 5 is all about a lot about Bhumandala, the Sarva, the creation, the sthana of the Bhumandala. So what is Anidhara doing? That takes us to that section now. No? We are seeing Anidhara meditating. Now, what we just read at the beginning, that Anidhara is meditating doing Ashtanga Yoga, and because of Lord Brahma sending this Apsara, themselves, his meditation is broken. Why? Not because he was meditating on this beautiful girl, but he was meditating on some higher principles, but because of the hearing of the tinkle of the ankle bells of this beautiful, charming lady, his sadhana got immediately abrupted. You know, and then he started getting attached to this girl and flattering her and finally marrying her. No? So we can see here what we can learn is the power of Maya when it comes to the opposite sex. So very, very strong power of Maya when we can see in the context of the opposite sex. Why? How? Just because of the tinkle of the ankle where it is wrong. There's a line, it's tinkle, tinkle, little star. How I wonder what you are. So tinkle, tinkle, little star, you know? How I wonder what you are. And children get attracted to the tinkling of these little stars. And we know they're not little stars. You know? The children on the stars will be singing, tinkle, tinkle, little, how I wonder how significant you are, how insignificant you are. You know? So we are insignificant compared to the stars. But anyway, the tinkling of the twinkling of the little stars is very, very attractive to the children. And here in Agnidhara's situation, you know, it is like tinkle, tinkle, little bells. How I wonder who you are. Who you are, that is so attractive to me. You know, I want to know. So this tinkling can lead to the fall down. It's just amazing power of Maya. So when it comes to senses, and I'll start concluding now. When it comes to senses, you know, senses are very strong. It can be allured to the glamour of the material world very, very quickly, especially when it comes to the opposite sex. You know, very, very strong. So what can we do? We can do two things with our senses. One, we can be controlled by our senses. Or two, we can control our senses. Now, when we this we know, you know, we have read this many times. We can be controlled by our senses or we can control our senses. When we control our senses, there can be two steps. So firstly, we can curb our senses. Secondly, we can conquer our senses. And there's a difference. You know? That's why I want to just speak about this for a few minutes. So being conquered by the senses is one case, which is here, you know, Agnidhara, and majority of the human population at the moment. And animal population as well, I guess, you know, because they also get affected. How do we control the senses? We can curb it or we can conquer it. What does curbing and conquering mean? Curbing means that I'm not being able to control my senses, but I'm struggling, but I'm trying. And I'm almost like forcefully withdrawing my senses from the sense objects. You know? For example, if somebody gives me sweets at that moment, you know, I say that I am fasting from sweets because it is, I've just taken a breath for Purushottaman, then I will not take sweets. So I don't eat. But if somebody offers the sweets, my reactions are, I'm fasting from sweets because it's Purushottaman. And that's all. And now this is curbing the senses. Because if somebody does put the gulab jamun in the front, it's like, oh my Krishna, gulab jamun. Only if it was not Purushottaman, only when the month is over, then I can just gobble those five gulab jamuns in 5 seconds. You know, that will be the reaction. So this is curbing by force, almost like by force, yeah, something. Whereas conquering the senses will be whether you put 5 gulab jamuns and in 3 containers of ice cream with some jalebis and laddus and whatever else. I don't like sweets. I don't want sweets. It's like I'm indifferent. Out of sight or out of mind or in sight but still out of mind. Either way, I'm just not affected. So this is called conquering. We conquer. So Prabhupada, there was an incident that comes to mind. When Prabhupada was in Delhi in the early days, during the Pandal programs, 10,000 people assembled in Delhi for the programs. So as he was walking back, or as he was walking to this place, one or the other, as he was walking, thousands of people were paying dandavats to him. And at one time, Prabhupada said to one of the disciples, he said, "You know why they are paying dandavats to me?" Very profound statement he made. He said, "You know why people are, all these people, they were the yogis, they were just Indians, whoever just come to hear the katha." So he said, "You know why they are paying dandavats to me?" Prabhupada said, "Because I don't have any attraction to women. I don't have any sexual desires, or something like that. I don't have any attraction to the opposite sex. And that's why they are paying dandavats to me." So what does it teach us? That when our heart is clean, our quality will shine. And people will respect us. Amani Namana Deva is good, but people will automatically respect you. So like that. So there is conquering the senses now. It doesn't matter whether something is attractive or not attractive to me. I'm just simply poisoning all of this. So the force is controlling the senses, or being controlled by the senses, or controlling the senses, or curbing the senses, or conquering the senses. Some of the things that we can use is to estimate where we see. Now the last point I wanted to make is that a lot of time our senses in our scriptures are compared to animals. Animals, at least two that I would think of, I'm sure there will be more. And what Prabhupada writes here anyway. Our senses are compared to animals to give us an analogy of how we can deal with these rascal senses, which is always running towards something for sensual enjoyment. First one is horse. In that famous chariot example, when the different parts of the chariot are compared to the different parts of the person, if I can get this right, the chariot is compared to the body, the passenger is the soul, the intelligence is the charioteer, the reins of the horses are the mind, and the horses themselves are the senses. So what is explained, if the horses are unbridled, then they will run wherever they want to run. Especially if there are five horses in the chariot, and we have got five senses. So they will run and create havoc in our life. So if the senses are bridled, which is the bridled horse, then only the horses will take the passenger, which is the soul, to its desired destination. So Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, how do we bridle the senses? Through sharpening our intelligence. Sharpening our intelligence. So that's one aspect that we can implement in our life. And those intelligence is sharpened by the torchlight of the transcendental knowledge. And that is in Bhagavatam. When we hear Bhagavatam and read Bhagavatam, our senses get purified and they will create less troubles in our life. The second energy of an animal demon most of the time, or reptile demon, is the snake. Is the snake a reptile? Whatever. Literally, snake. That's an animal species. So the snake, the snake has got this poisonous venom, and if the snake bites, then the poison will spread in the body. So Prabhupada says in his purport that if we don't control our senses, then we'll inject. Prabhupada uses this word actually. If you don't control our senses, the senses will inject venomous, poisonous into your body, and that will lead to the pitfall of your spiritual journey. So what we can do is defend the snake. Because although the snake is very ferocious, if you defend the snake, then the snake is harmless, although it is still poisonous. It is still poisonous, but it will not bother you because it just can't bite you anymore. So he said we defend our senses. How do we do it? The way we do it is because our problem is not so much here in the material body. That is not our problem. Our problem is more because our senses are noted to the three modes of the material nature. And the three modes of the material nature make us dance like a puppet and sometimes pull us in goodness, sometimes in passion, and sometimes in ignorance, but in all the times with the three modes, giving us some attraction. Whether in goodness is also an attraction or also in ignorance. So the problem is our senses are noted to the three modes of the material nature. And there is the state when the jiva is actually in the material body in one sense. Because the jiva gets this material body, but the bewilderment happens when it's tied to the three modes of the material nature. So how to get rid of it is to cut those three knots that are attached to the three modes of the material nature and have only one knot to all the senses and tie it to Krishna. In that way the senses will not bother us. So it's all about cutting. cut, 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 cut the three notes, which is very, very hard. So I'm speaking from a theoretical point of view, I'm not even close to being mastering any of this. Is that we cut the three notes and tie the note to Krishna and we will be all right. Because at any point in time, you know, especially for sadhakas like us, our senses are being pulled towards two things. At any point in time, our senses are being pulled towards two things. One are the sense objects for our sensual pleasure, and second towards Krishna as well. That we want to continue our journey in saving Krishna. As sadhakas, we have developed this much of attraction towards Krishna for sure. That we are attracted to Krishna undoubtedly, you know, that we are attracted to Krishna. But our problem is, we are not attracted only to Krishna. We are also attracted to other things. Krishna, take us back to Godhead, but gently, you know, little gently. You know, let me just enjoy a little bit of material opulence as well. You know, we have to build a house, have a nice family, some education, some money, and then when I'm about to retire, then you take me back to Godhead, but not immediately. You know, we are not at that level. So we want best of the both, you know, at the moment. And but we are trying our level best to be more towards this Krishna senses rather than the material senses, sensual objects. Yeah. So Prabhupada teaches us therefore that at any point in time when you are being pulled by these two senses, Krishna senses and let's say sense, the material objects, then to give in to the sense object is nonsense. Giving to the sense object is nonsense. Don't do that. Don't do this nonsense business. Finish it off in this lifetime. And how do we do this? So whenever temptation comes, the best way to say no to temptation is to say yes to devotion. The best way to say no to temptation is to say yes to devotion. Because param drishtva nivartate. The senses, our material senses, our senses attachment to the material objects can be quietened down if it is given in fair higher taste. When there is higher taste, the lower taste is completely gone. And it's the beauty of our philosophy that we don't have to fight so much about worrying so much about the negatives. Just concentrate on the positives and we will be alright. Okay? So I will stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections?
So in Prabhupada purport, he is mentioning you know, yogis can easily get attracted and fall down. Prabhupada is explaining about different type of yogis and also devotees, and he gives an analogy of how Samitra fell down just by hearing tinkerbell sound, also sight, seeing beautiful, also smell, I think, from Hiranyaka.
Yeah.
But of course, on the other hand, Prabhupada is saying that devotees, they are more attached to Krishna, they cannot easily fall down. Of course, sometimes those who are in the beginning stage, Kanishtha, Madhyama, they might get attracted or fall down. But however, those who are behind these more centuries, as you said, so they cannot easily fall down. Of course, we have got best examples of Namacharya,
yeah.
I think with yogic practice, so they are focused much on tip of nose. Still, you know, this vision they can see what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas devotees like Haridas Thakur, so he is chanting, so he has a goal that I have to chant these many rounds and then I will consider. But whereas yogis, they probably do not have that goal. Okay, I have to meditate for 10,000 and then sit down there.
Mm-hmm.
If they follow that goal, then there is a chance that they might transform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, so it seems like devotee's approach is easy, and there is a goal for a day, goal for a hour, then so by the time day is over, then we can postpone. So therefore, we keep postponing, then they will become stale.
Mm-hmm.
So no more attack to either the object or the person.
Yeah. Is it a difference from another person? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or you can elaborate more.
No, I think you said it right. Except for maybe just one minor thing that I picked up is that when Haridas Thakur told the prostitute to wait, it is not because he said, you know, that I got my rounds to chant and then I will consider you. It's not, that's not what is That's not what the case is. The case is more so, he teaches that if somebody comes to you with their, if somebody comes to a devotee with their problems, first we have to understand their problem. We don't reject their problems. This is an art of preaching. You hear their problems, you accept their problems, that yes, it is a problem, and then I will give you a solution, if you have come to me more with your problem. So they are what Rajas Thakur is teaching us, is that when the prostitute comes to him with a problem, that she wants a sensual enjoyment, he says that, okay, I can hear you, yeah, that's your problem, and I will give you a solution. And what is the solution? So I will change, and there is a solution for your problem. Just by hearing this mantra, I know you will get purified. So he's got that strong conviction that by chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra will solve her problem. So it's, he makes us sit down there for Krishna Katha. It is Krishna Nama Katha. No? And then Nama Katha will fix you. Not that you know it's that I have to do my chanting, not that. It's a different mindset, I mean, the way he dealt with that problem of the prostitute by giving a Krishna Nama Katha. Like that. So in our case, yes, we have to just follow the instructions of the spiritual master at the beginning stages, when to curb the senses, because he says, follow four regulative principles and you will be alright, in the sadhana bhakti stage. So we just follow the principles of the instructions of the spiritual master, but when we get more mature in our Krishna consciousness, then that becomes our culture rather than compliance. At the moment we try to curb our senses with compliance to the spiritual master's instructions. But eventually it will become a culture of us. It just doesn't matter. I'm not attracted. And we can see that, especially in my case, I know that I come from the background of it's a meat eating. But I don't need a spiritual master's instructions at the moment not to eat meat. It's like, my goodness, that's just so gross. When you know that we go to secret commerce these days, it's all online. But when things are open, when we walk into the supermarket, it's like the smell is so foul. Sometimes we don't even buy things that is near to the area where the meat is being sold. So it just goes away. It just goes away. But some other senses, of course, is always more difficult for all of us. But eventually, so Lord Vishnu also tells Brahma, and the Chaturthi Bhagavatam, the same thing, that yep, the highest perfection is Prema Bhakti. But to get to that, start with sadhana bhakti, unveya vyati rekabhyam, then say sarvatra sarvada. Then in all places, times, all time places, system stands, do sadhana bhakti, and then practice makes perfect. So the perfect vision is what you see Krishna everywhere. Inside, yata manti bhutani, bhutesu chava cheshvanu, pravishthani and pravishthani, tada deshvanu, deshvanu. That I am inside and I am outside. And to be able to see Krishna inside and outside, Bahir Narasimha, Hridaya Narasimha, inside and outside, we need to have the perfect vision, that is called Prema Bhakti. The devotee sees Krishna everywhere. But how do we get to that perfection? By practice. And what is that practice? The practice is that Yat Syat Sarvatra Sarvatra. At every time, present circumstances, we serve the Lord. We inquire. Eta Deva Jignyasam. Tattva jignyasu atmana anvaya vyati rekhavyam yat syat sarvatra sarvatra. We should enquire. And the highest principle, the epitome of all enquiry is to enquire about the absolute good, tattva, tattva jignyasu atmana. By directly or indirectly, by other processes or by bhakti, in all time places and circumstances, and then you get the perfect vision of able to see Krishna everywhere. And then, it's not so much about following the instructions of the spiritual master at that time, it is just that. We are at that stage, but there is some time away. We have to work hard to get there. To be able to really understand the purports of the spiritual master takes some time. And Lord Rama again demonstrates, I'll finish with that sweet pastime. We've got 5 minutes, so I'll finish with that sweet pastime. In the NIH from another book, so I'll repeat. He said that in the case of Lord Ram, when the swayamvar was being arranged, and Lord Ram has to break the somebody has to break the air, the bow, Lord Shiva's bow, to be able to be eligible to marry Mother Sita. Then, in that scene, a lot of powerful kings are there and kshatriyas are there, and they can't even shake the bow a little bit, what to speak about breaking it. And then, at the end, when nobody is able to move the bow even to a micro inch, Then Lord Ram, Vasishtha, right? Vishwamitra. Na? So Vishwamitra glanced at Lord Ram and said, Ram, see the bow. So that's what he said, see the bow. Now in that context, if you are a student to the caliber of Lord Ram, when the spiritual master is saying, see the bow, what does it actually mean? It means in that context, we have to understand the purport of the spiritual master's instruction. So they are, knowing that the whole occasion is to break the bow, to be able to be Devi Mother Sita. Knowing that nobody has been able to do it, so when Vishwamitra is saying that, it was Shiva Vishwamitra, right? What was his name? Vishwamitra. So when Vishwamitra said that, look at the bow, Lord Ram, look at the bow, Lord Ram understands the purport of the spiritual master's instruction and knows that his duty is to get up, go and see the bow, and break the bow, and Devi Mother Sita. Now all the consequences of it comes as a package. You mean one instruction. One instruction means, instruction is not to see the bow. Actually, the purport of the instruction is to Devi Mother Sita. But you start from here. All are these 900 steps to get to the stage of Devi Mother Sita. But a student who is not at the level of Lord Ram, what will he see? He will see, okay, my Gurudev, Guru Maharaj has said, go and see the bow. I will get up, go and see the bow, and come back and sit down. Gurudev, I have seen the bow. This is second class intelligence. Worst than that is the third class intelligence. Guru Maharaj says, Shishya, student, please go and see the bow. Third class intelligence reaction should be, I'm going very soon. Just give me 5 minutes. In 5 minutes, I will go and see the bow. Not now, because I'm just busy with somebody else. Just give me 5 minutes, Guru Maharaj, I will go and see the bow. Third class intelligence. Fourth class intelligence, Guru Maharaj says, Shishya, student, please go and see the bow. Why do I have to go? Why can't you go and see? Why are you asking me to go and see the bow? You please go and see for yourself. Oh, if you want, I can show you the bow on some video call. Everything is now on Zoom. We can't travel anywhere. So everything is coming on Zoom and and WebEx and all that. So I will show you the bow. Turn on your video. I'll put a webcam there. And you see the bow, on your video call. So this is the fourth class of laziness. You told me to see the bow. I'm not going to go. You go and see. It's your problem, not mine. The first class intelligence Lord Ram demonstrates that the master, spiritual master says, see the bow, the purport is to Devi Mother Sita. Go and do everything else all together. So we are like that. At the moment, it's like, why are those four devotees there? Why can't we eat chocolate? Why can't we eat a little bit of kali bread? Why can't we do all these things? But eventually all these things will go away. Eventually. So there is big hope for us. Senses will eventually be conquered through Krishna's mercy. Okay, we will defeat this of Yana. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Nandra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.